Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new The Hacker Factory podcast with hacker maker Philip Wiley. You're about to discover what the role of a professional hacker entails, the different specializations it holds, and what it takes to learn and become one. Enjoy the conversation as Philip and guests unveil the secrets of professional hacking, a mysterious, intriguing, and often misunderstood occupation. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
BugCrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hacker Factory podcast. I'm your host, the hacker maker, Philip Wiley. In each episode, I have a unique guest sharing their story of how they got started in the industry. And hopefully these stories will help you, encourage you, or help you get started in the industry. And today I'm very excited to have Daryl on with us. Daryl Baker was recommended from a friend and former podcast guest, Christoph, that was on here a while back. And so he gave me a good tip. So fortunately, we have a good guest this week. And it's kind of nice to get guests on that I don't know about, because most of the time I'm pulling from people I know from the community. I see them on social media or find them through conferences. So it's always good to get, you know, someone recommended from a friend or referred to by someone else, because they usually bring something in totally new and always have some good advice and stories and experience to share. So thanks for joining.
Oh, thanks for having me. I was actually very excited when this opportunity popped up. So I'm really excited to be here.
Well, I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule and doing this last minute. So it's kind of interesting the way this goes. Sometimes I'll get like a batch of podcasts done, and then once they're out, then it's back to finding people. So you know, it's good. When this show started, we were mainly focusing on people that were doing pen testing, but with a lot of things I do, you know, I don't know why I don't think these things out more sometimes, but you know, you think about, you know, the Hacker Factory podcast, the idea of it was about offensive security, but there's so many different other areas in security, and the listeners have, you know, various interests and stuff. So it's always good. So why don't you share a little bit about yourself, kind of share how you got started and what you're doing now?
My name's Daryl Baker. Currently I am a security consultant for TriMark. I work with Sean Metcalf. We do a lot of Active Directory assessments. So I'm on the identity team. And I specialize in Microsoft Identity as well as Active Directory Identity and Active Directory Threat Emulation. So I do a lot of purple teaming. I do a lot of labs and simulation, do a lot of testing and research for the latest vulnerabilities inside of Active Directory. That transition was a long and interesting one. Originally, I think, you know, when I became an adult, I guess I should say, you know, graduating high school, don't really know what you want to do. I went to the military. I was in the military for 12 years, combat arms. I was a tanker, the pistol instructor. And it was in my second tour in Iraq that I had a really good friend of mine who was in communications. And, you know, he's studying for CCNA. I have no idea what it is, but he's like, hey, man, read this book. It's how the internet works, you know? So, you know, I'm flipping through it. We got nothing else to do in our downtime. And it was pretty interesting. I got hooked, and I knew it's what I wanted to do. Got an opportunity to work in the Network Operations Center right before the end of that tour. And so like when I came back, got out of the military, I had a very kind of traditional IT archway, I guess we'll say, after that. Did break fix with Best Buy, Geek Squad, then moved on to help desk, then network admin, systems admin, data center manager, you know. So I've pretty much touched every IT job that there is, from running cable and actually some really unique places, because I worked at an aquarium. I worked at a very small university, so I got to see some really interesting things that you wouldn't necessarily see. But the transition into security is always hard and unique for everybody. So I knew from the very beginning that I wanted to be in security. What I didn't know is really what that meant. You know, because you don't know what you don't know. You watch movies, you hear stories, and things sound cool. But what I did know is I don't know how any of this stuff worked. So for me, what made sense was to try to absorb as much information as I could from all the sources that I could. Like I said, I had a good friend of mine. He was kind of a mentor in the early days as to telling me about, you know, CompTIA certifications and, you know, hey, you can just go out and buy these books that tell you exactly how this works. And you can walk into a job interview and just ace it. You don't have to go to a school. You don't have to sit in a class. I mean, if you learn well on your own, you can absolutely go and do that. So that absolutely opened up a different world as far as like career trajectory, because I was able to sit down and like actually plan out, all right, so I want to learn this by this point. Once you learn A, then you realize you don't know anything about B. So then you sit down, you do it again, you reassess, and you okay, well, I want to learn B by this point, and then C and D, and that's how it goes, you know, constantly learning. So from the very beginning, I was getting certifications. So COVID hits, I'm a data center manager, and I had actually watched a webcast about Active Directory security. You know, it's been a hot subject over the last few years, so I was keeping up with it. I had a very unique Active Directory environment that I was in charge of at the time. So watched this webcast. It was really, really good, really informative. The guy who was actually speaking on the webcast put out his LinkedIn information at the end of it. So I just, you know, added him. You know, no big deal. Just going to follow him, see what kind of content he puts out. So I don't know, 6-7 months later, there he is on LinkedIn saying, hey, we're hiring. We're looking for people that know Active Directory really, really well. You don't have to be a security guru. We really want people that know Active Directory. We can teach you security. It's much harder to teach you this big framework that has so many, you know, different combinations and options. So, I mean, I reached out to him instantly on LinkedIn. I was like, hey, here's my resume. I watched your webcast. I thought it was awesome, you know. So I think I was in an interview 2 days after that, and I was hired like 6 days after that. And it was a very small French company doing some really cool proprietary security stuff with Active Directory and ingesting data in very like unique ways. And I was the second person in the United States working for that company, and I was the first technical person. So I did everything from a technical level for that company in the United States with this product. So that was everything from maintaining that product to building solutions for customers, building out custom scripts, building out, you know, all kinds of different things that we needed in order to make that flow work. So for, you know, for probably a year, it was just kind of the two of us rocking that and expanding business in the US. And we get acquired by a large cybersecurity company. You know, that's the dream. That's you pop champagne, you know, like we made it. And it was great. Honestly, for me, I liked the small company, and you know, I found that out. The big companies are great, but and some people love that. It was just too many moving parts for me, too many moving pieces, and I missed the flexibility to kind of build on my own and kind of create things. So I was at Hackers Teaching Hackers. I created the Active Directory Hacking Village. So I'm the original creator of AD Hacking Village. We've been doing it for a while now, and it's a really cool simulation. I'll actually be at a few different conferences this year with it. So blue team conferences, usually it's set up in a way that blue teamers can sit down and make different adjustments to Active Directory. And there's some automated attacks that just constantly just slam AD. If it's a red team conference, it's the opposite. And so you can do all kinds of things with Kali Linux and try to attack AD, and AD is going to put up all kinds of different defenses and stuff to both detect you and then stop those attackers. And then we have what I call beast mode, which is a show mode, to whereas I can let these scripts go and they're automated and I have no idea who's going to win. It's just red versus blue, and you can just watch the simulations just go to town across your event logs. It's actually very cool to see happen, and sometimes you get some interesting results, you know, when you just like computers do what they do. So, so I was doing that, and that's where I ran into Sean Metcalf, and we had a good conversation about, you know, AD security, and I've been there ever since. So that's kind of my story in a nutshell as to how I got to where I was at right now. But in that, to be clear, you know, in that first conversation that I had, and you know, I had those interviews with that small fringe company. By the time I sat down and had that interview, even though this was my first interview with a security company, I had already had my CISSP at the time. I had CCNA, had Network Plus, as well as Security Plus and A Plus. So I had a few certifications under my belt, as well as about 9 years of IT administration, as well as, you know, managing an entire data center virtualization. You know, so it wasn't like I came in fresh out of college, just kind of with you know, this theoretical knowledge, but no hands-on experience. So yeah, that's really my story and how I came to be where I am today.
Well, that's an awesome background. And I think that's, in my opinion, that's the great way to get in, because a lot of times people trying to get into security, although it's a very, very important piece, they don't realize how small of a part it is of the overall technology, because you figure just how Active Directory works and all that stuff, security is part of that. So, you know, like them wanting to hire someone that knew a lot of Active Directory, that's smart, because to try to come in and teach Active Directory to someone that has a security background, that's going to be difficult. Yep. So one thing for listeners to keep in mind out there.
Yeah, for sure. And I have, at this point, I've trained, I would say probably close to 1,000 people. This is admins, engineers, consultants on both Active Directory security specifically, as well as Active Directory. But I can't tell you the amount of time that we spend on just Active Directory fundamentals, you know, because I'll sit in a room with a bunch of, you know, red teamers or former pen testers, and these guys spend 80% of their time on Linux boxes, and they know some well-known exploits for Windows. You know, they'll dump ntds.dit, you know, the old volume shadow copy trick. But when we start talking about different methods in order to access LSAS remotely and things like that, you know, they're not necessarily thinking about these things, because the new methodology for attacking Active Directory anyway is not really being so loud and breaking things. It's using existing mechanisms that are there just in ways that they weren't intended to be used, you know? And that makes it very hard for the blue teamers to stop that, because, you know, those mechanisms are there for that reason, you know? So it's kind of a different mentality, but we spend way more time just talking about, like, what is Active Directory? What are security groups? What's a security principle? Like, how do these trusts work? I have a couple of talks this year on delegations, because there's a lot of attacks that are coming out with against Active Directory right now. Curve Relay Up is a really big one. And it's delegations are at the heart of it, especially resource-based constrained delegations. And the thing about it is it's a very dense subject, and not a lot of people understand exactly how it works and the nuances of it. But the more that we talk about it, and the more that you know, we can understand it, both the admins as well as you know, the adversarial emulators can do a better job at creating defenses against it, you know, some of these attacks, because we're just doing, you know, as we move forward, you know, we're just expanding that attack surface, right? The things that we used to do on premise that were stuck on premise are now expanding into the cloud. You know, they used to be two separate things, and now we're creating these gateways and these bridges, right? And we're allowing these old protocols that we know have weaknesses, you know, known weaknesses that have been there for years, to bridge across and bridge those gaps between these two environments. You know, so it's really interesting to see, you know, that kind of a change as we move forward.
Yeah, that's very cool, because it's kind of interesting, because when I moved over from AppSec into pen testing back in 2012, there really weren't the Active Directory attacks out there. You're kind of mentioning how people using the old type of Windows attacks, and that was pretty much what was there. And then it's interesting how the industry's evolved due to more of the knowledge of how to attack Active Directory, as well as, you know, the rise of PowerShell, because, you know, PowerShell's become a really popular tool for pen testing and for malicious activities.
Yep, 100%. Yeah, I mean, you've got to realize that at the heart of a lot of these attacks, you know, we're attacking, some of these protocols are 40 years old. Some of the most modern changes to these protocols are 10 years old, you know? So there's a lot of opportunity if you're looking for it.
Yeah, that's great. So for our listeners, could you explain what Active Directory is?
Sure. So Active Directory is a directory service, and essentially it's a large database, and it holds information about all of your user objects and your computer objects inside of an enterprise. So whenever, you know, you've ever gotten some credentials, maybe from your job, maybe from your school, where you had a username and a password, you're able to log into every single computer, you know, on that campus. Active Directory was probably running in the background. So it knows your account, it knows your username, it knows your password, and does some validation in the background to make sure that you're you. And then it makes sure that when you log into that computer, you're restricted to only the things that you have the permissions to have access to. There are a lot of different things that you can do beyond just that, but that's kind of what it is in a nutshell. It keeps, it verifies who you are on a network and what you have permissions to.
Yeah. And the cool thing about it is I started out as a sysadmin back in 97. So I used to work with Windows NT 4.0. And then I remember when Active Directory came out, it's just so much easier to administer things with Active Directory. Because before, you'd have to go to set up accounts on every different machine, and trying to manage all that was a big hassle. And at the time, Novell NetWare was, you know, kind of the predominant network operating system, because they had their Novell directory services that people were using, which now end up, well, I'm not sure if it's still around, but it evolved into eDirectory. But that was like, wasn't the first, because you had Banyan Vines before them, but it was like the one that really caught on, and Microsoft kind of was smart by, in, you know, implementing their own directory services.
Yep. Yeah. 100%. And it's based on X.500. So it's the same old directory services. They've just put some nice wrappers around it. But just how you said, it's very easy, especially compared to some of the older directory services. That's kind of where the issue lies. So Active Directory out of the box, let's say it's 15 clicks, right? So you say you want to enable Active Directory directory services on your server. You hit next. You say, what do you want to call your domain? Mydomain.com. And basically from there, you can just hit next, 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 next. And boom, you have a domain. It'll restart and you're good to go. You've got a domain controller, you've got a domain, you've got DNS that's there, and you're good to go. The problem is you've also got about 20 out of the box vulnerabilities, right? So if you're not aware of the fact that out of the box, Active Directory is vulnerable, you're not gonna know that. You expand into Active Directory certificate services, right? And so you click that box because you want to be safe about your Active Directory. So of course you're going to implement PKI, and it's free. So why wouldn't you? You hit your next, 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 bam. Now you've got a CA, you're good to go. You can issue certs inside of Active Directory. You're more secure, except for your CA is vulnerable, you know, out of the box. So it's these kind of things with Active Directory that makes it so hard for administrators, especially newer administrators or ones who are not as keen to some of these new vulnerabilities that we keep finding. I mean, just month over month, especially around certificate services. So it's really, really interesting. What I will say to anybody who's interested in Active Directory out there, or maybe application security out there, just constantly learn, read about everything. Anything that interests you, it's all valid. It all comes in handy. You may not think that it's going to come in handy today, until you decide that you need to run a script or create some solution to something. And you're like, well, I know how those two pieces work. And I think that's really what makes strong engineers. You know, you don't have to know everything. It's more of the ability of piecing those Lego pieces together to build something than knowing what every single piece does. You know, if the pieces exist, you can get them.
And one of the things too is that, you know, example with you you have experience in a lot of different areas, but that's also, you know, you see so many different examples, and, you know, there, it's nice that there are so many different ways of doing it, things that, you know, you kind of pick your own journey. But the cool thing is too, is to see, you know, a lot of people starting out, you try to learn a little bit about everything, but this also goes to show your background. It's really good to get really good at something, not necessarily say, you know, you maybe you were a specialist, but to know something really well, because I mean, that's what help you break into the industry because you knew a very complex system very well. And so that was helpful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's just one of those, I knew a thing, I saw an opportunity, and I went for that opportunity. Yeah. I wasn't sitting at home saying that, hey, you know, I need to change Active Directory. That wasn't, you know, what I woke up thinking about that day. So it was very cool when I saw the opportunity come across, because it was, yeah, I can talk to you about Active Directory all day, but as far as the security, the whole reason why we're having this conversation is because I was watching your video on Active Directory security. So it was actually a really cool and humbling experience. And I've learned so much in the last few years over that, because of that conversation. You never know what opportunities are going to arise. So funny enough, you and I are having this conversation because we have a mutual acquaintance, Christoph. So I know Christoph actually because of nothing to do with the cyber world. I ran into Christoph in the Bahamas in the beginning of this year. Yep. So he and I were sitting at a bar having a drink, and his wife was there, and she was talking to him about something, and she said something about, my husband hacks things or whatever, you know? So of course my ears peak up, and I'm like, oh, what does that mean? And we kind of start having this conversation, and I was like, oh, I think we do very similar jobs. And so that's actually how I met Christoph in the beginning of this year. You just never know where those opportunities are going to come up.
It's really funny how small a world this is for you to meet him that way. And it's, that's another thing too. One of the big things that helps people get jobs is networking, and that's just a prime example. So, always be listening and always look for opportunities. I mean, it's almost like using the hacker mindset here, see things and take advantage of the opportunities. And so that's pretty amazing that you met him on vacation somewhere. So that's
pretty interesting. 100%.
Yeah.
And what I will say is, I've bumped into a few people kind of out in the wild. And most of the time, I mean, I've never had an issue going up to somebody and kind of having a quick powwow about, oh, what do you do? How'd you get into that? Are you guys hiring? What if I was interested in your company, a piece of advice could you give me if I want to do what you do? That kind of a thing. And usually people are pretty open. They give you 30 seconds of of what's inside their brain. And sometimes that's the golden ticket because we all know it was kind of hard for all of us to get into security. It's weird. It's getting easier. There's more of a direct path, but I think until about a couple of years ago, there wasn't really a direct path. You kind of fell into it because of a need somewhere, So.
Yeah. That's one of the things too, that, although you're mentioning all this information about how you started and I kind of started similar, but for the people listening, this doesn't mean that you have to start out as a sysadmin or whatever. You can jump right into it. And it's more viable option now, because whenever I started out in 97 as a sysadmin, I didn't hear of any jobs for pen testing, and I'm sure they would have been very scarce and would have been hard to get. And so now someone can train up and learn the trade and jump right in. They don't have to spend 5, 10, 20 years to prep for it.
100%. There are so many educational resources that are out there between the academies, the labs online, the books that have been written. their resources are out there. Whereas I remember when I was first really digging into some network security, what I considered to be network security at the time, one of the suggested books on the market was Hacking Wi-Fi for Dummies. You know what I mean? That was on the technical book next to O'Reilly. You know what I mean? That was top stuff, but it was also, 1999, So a lot of things have changed since then. And what I will say is, in my experience, because I've hired people both on the security side as well as on the IT side and in academia, as well as, privatized and things like that. From what I have found, I would say that your drive and the effort that you put into yourself and, you are your own product. So the effort that you put into yourself, that it shows, what you do in your free time matters. If you maybe don't have a college degree, but you know, in your free time, you've been taking down some labs, or you volunteer your time to help fix networking at I don't know, the local rec or something like that. You know, those kind of things, they stick out. There are a lot of organizations that have opportunities for volunteers. So I am part of an organization called Blacks in Cybersecurity. You do not have to be Black to be part of it. It's a really cool organization. We are just trying to reach out and get more and more people involved, especially people of color, involved in cybersecurity, and just so that people know that the opportunity is there. It does seem like that wall is so high, and you can feel very fenced off, but it really is there. You talk to people, get on LinkedIn, send messages, get on Twitter, read on stuff. And one of the things that I think really goes a long way is, you know, create a Twitter page, or like, and I'm not telling anybody how to live their life. It's just one of the things that I have seen that seems to be successful for people is, you know, you create some kind of a blog platform, right? Whether it's Twitter or whatever it is. And as you go off and you decide to learn something, you know, today I'm going to learn about the BGP protocol. So you read about BGP protocol for 2 or 3 hours, right? And then put some slides together. What did you learn, right? Put that on your blog. Maybe write about it. Maybe release a short video. And, you know, after a couple of months, you've got quite a bit of content that's there. So, you know, when you sit down for that first interview or maybe the 50th interview, whatever it is, you've got a portfolio of information and knowledge that not only that you have, that's in a format that's ready to share with other people. And like, it goes a long way, I think.
That's some great advice, because a lot of times you hear people talk about doing content creation, creating a blog and stuff to get to help their efforts getting hired. But the way you put it together, that's really great advice. And I think that's something I haven't really heard anyone reference, you know, that detailed, but that's pretty good. And it's amazing how the opportunities like content creation, people doing a blog, people making YouTube videos, yep, or all this content creation. I mean, there's people that basically that's kind of where they got their in, because yep, they had a blog, you know, they were writing stuff on Medium, or they're posting up videos, and that kind of gets them connected. And, you know, one of the things a hiring manager is going to see is, you know, it looks like you know what you're doing technically. You know, they see your communication skills through your writing, how you're communicating that, and that's all good stuff.
Yep, 100%. 100%. Another thing I'll say too is, in the security world, in my experience, formal education is, it can't, depending on what you're doing, can be less important. Because it's not necessarily about knowledge. My opinion of college isn't necessarily to make you smart, right? It's to help you organize your thoughts so that when, you know, in the future you need to research something, you understand the process in order to go out and research that. Some people are autodidacts, or they're just really good at doing that on their own, or, you know, and that's fine. You see a lot of researchers that have no problem locking themselves up for a weekend. They come back with this amazing work, you know? So I have seen all kinds of people with all kinds of interesting backgrounds in the security world. And a lot of times their backgrounds are not security. You know, I've seen lawyers and teachers, and, you know, they were housewives, just random backgrounds where either they were interested in something or something in their life changed. And, they decided to pick up a book, learn a subject, and, you know, started a new career. You know, I think it's really attainable if it's something that you want to do. Now, on the IT side, depending on what you're doing on the IT side, right? Let's say you want to be a database admin or a network admin. I don't think you necessarily have to go to school for 10 years, but I do think that a computer programmer. I do think, though, that formalized, standardized training of some sort, at least in the beginning, is going to take you a lot further, because there's a lot of information, foundational knowledge that you really got to crunch in there. Before you can have fun with some of those subjects. So with security, you can kind of pick and choose the pieces that you like, and you expand on that, because, you know, every object inside of an enterprise has value. And because of that, it needs to be secure. So you're interested in something, figure out how that aligns with what it is that you want to do.
Yeah, and a nice thing too, when you're talking about mentioning some of the IT skills, just, you know, a lot of times industry knowledge. So if you worked for a bank and maybe you were just a teller at a bank, if you understand like the financial industry, understanding that business somewhat will help you in roles. Because I mean, one of the things that helped me in my career is I worked for a mortgage company for 14 years. So I got a lot of interest from financial institutions because of working that business back, having that background. But a lot of times you may not have to know it that much in depth, but just working in that area makes, you know, you attractive as an employee for one of those companies.
Yep, 100%. 100%. Also too, I mean, another thing to keep in mind is from a security standpoint, you know, not everybody is super technical, and not all security roles are technical in the same way. There are a lot of roles where it's all about personality. There's a lot of roles where, you know, social engineering skills and empathy go a long way, especially. And you know what? Actually, I'll bring up pen testing, right? Because so I'm not a pen tester. I have no experience with pen testing. And I do think that there's some soft skills that are required with pen testing, for instance, that are not required with red teaming. You know, red teaming, you go in, you have your target, you break some stuff, and you know, you get out. With pen testing, sure, you broke some stuff, but that COO, yeah, I mean, they don't want to hear that you broke some stuff. You know, they want, that beautiful report. They want the layout as to like, what did you find? How do we fix this? You know, like that's what they want. They want the report. And you got to be able to put on those white gloves and hand it to them, you know? So a lot more soft skills and that type of field. So I actually watched, Red Siege's podcast on Wednesday, and they had a red teamer in Brazil, and she's a physical red teamer. So she knows nothing about computers, nothing. So I really shouldn't say nothing like that. That's what she says, right? She knows nothing about computers, but you know, I'm sure she can pick every lock in your house. And she was talking about going on an engagement, and that was one of her most fun engagements. And literally she knocked on a door. It had a keypad, digital keypad. It was intense, but she knocked on the door. Somebody opens the door. She says she's with IT. They let her walk to every single computer, and she just puts in her thumb drive to every computer that's there, and then, you know, makes her phone call to the boss and gets out of there. But required absolutely no technical skills, you know, so, and she loves what she does. And those types of pen tests are also incredibly important. And you see those a lot with banks and prisons and all kinds of places. So you don't necessarily have to be a computer person to be a security person.
Yeah, that's good points. And it's just interesting too, because some people that may not do well in social situations may have a hard time with social engineering, but if they're doing like a phishing campaign or something, that may be a little bit easier. So, you know, there's like something for every personality, because I mean, trying to maintain composure under pressure while you're trying to talk your way in to some place can be nerve wracking. It's funny because I heard a talk at NOLAcon in 2019. These guys specialized in social engineering and physical pen testing, and they talked about that all their stuff that they have in their kit. One of the things that they carried with them was a candy bar, because once they pulled off getting into the building, there was such an adrenaline rush and such a flood of these of nervousness and stuff. They would go to the bathroom, sit there, calm down, collect their nerves, eat something so they can get their blood sugar up, and then continue on, because just the pressure. But some people, that's not that big of a deal, you know?
Yep. Yeah. I've got a buddy of mine that I'm actually looking forward to DEF CON, because we tend to go out and we do a bunch of social engineering bets, and it can get quite interesting to see how far you can get to places, and you end up having really interesting conversations with people, and it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. As long as you keep your head nice, cool, and calm, and don't do anything stupid.
So, yeah, what just kind of curious, I kind of have an idea. You kind of touched on certifications a little bit, but do you think certifications are required for someone to get started?
No, I don't think they're required. I do think they're useful. And I will say that if you do not have a degree, I personally would say get a certification. And I'm not going to say you should get this one over that one necessarily, but at minimum, just get a certification. Because the thing about it is, it's not so much that, you know, your certification is going to prove that you're an expert here or an expert there, but it proves that on, you know, in your own free time, you went out to go learn something. Then you paid some money to go out to go test to prove that you know this thing. So that's really what I'm looking for is the effort that you put into it. I would say that certifications can definitely give you a leg up. And depending on what it is that you want to do, there are certain certifications that stick out much more than others, you know, so that's also something to keep in mind. I have people that ask me about, you know, what's the best cert I should get, you know, should I get Pentest Plus? Should I, you know, get OSCP? Should I get CEH? And it depends. Honestly, it really does depend. And you have to kind of do your research as to what it is that you're interested in, you know, what kind of jobs that you're interested in, right? Look at the requirements and look at what certifications that the jobs that you're interested in are asking for, because they may not be what you think they are, you know, or they may not be at the level that you think they are, right? They may only be looking for associate level certifications, right? So you don't necessarily need to bust your chops for a professional level certification. Get in with your associate's level certification, get trained on the job, and let your job send you and hopefully pay for your next levels of certifications, you know? I would definitely say that certifications are the reason why I've never had an issue really getting a job in either in IT or since I've moved over to cybersecurity. But I've got those certifications that do prove that I know a lot of different things about a lot of different things. And I like to keep my certifications kind of diverse because I can dabble in a lot of different stuff. If I had two candidates, one candidate was a college graduate, but that's it. Just college grad, computer science or something. I don't know. That's it. And then I have another kid who didn't graduate college at all, but he's got OSCP, CEH, and I don't know, Security Plus or something like that. I'm probably going to have a deeper conversation, at least initially, with the kid who has just the certifications, right? Because it's like, what were your pathway? Because I know with the kid who went to college, I know his pathway. Like, I know how he got to learn what he learned. There's a curriculum for that. I can go online, I can look at your college, and I can see exactly what courses you took. Now it's all about just personality. Do you fit? Do you actually meet what you know your degree says that you do? With this other kid, I don't really have that. However, what I do have is I have a standardized metric of knowledge, right? Because, there's a lot of people that have degrees, right? And some of them had a 4.0 and some of them had a 2.0, right? So you got a big gap there, right? As far as where you can go. With certifications, some of those gaps for the certifications, those are very slim. Some of them are just go or no go. You get into some of those offensive security certs and it's all hands on. It's all hands on. It will prove you beyond just a theoretical. So I definitely think that they have a lot of merit. And if you use them for what it is that you're trying to do, that they can go a long way. But definitely keep in mind that there are some certs that resonate more with HR teams and some certs that resonate more with your technical teams. And so my recommendation is like I said, figure out what it is that you like to do, the job roles that sound cool to you, and then look at the certifications that those people have or that they're looking for you to have for those job roles.
Great advice. So what are your views? Because all the time people when get into the industry are always asking, do I need to learn how to code? And sometimes this is where they're talking actually C or whatever, C sharp, or even to like scripting. So what are your opinions on that? Is someone that's wanting to get into the industry, do they need that to start?
Oh, no, you don't need it to start. Definitely not. If you're going to be on the technical side, especially if you're going to be on the offensive side, on the technical side, it's going to come up. Eventually, you're going to dabble in Python at minimum. If you're going to get into custom payloads and stuff, you're probably going to dabble in C sharp or something. If you're doing reversing, you're going to get into assembly and that kind of thing. Like you can't avoid it. It's a part of breaking something is, taking it down to its smaller parts, and that's code. So, but definitely not required going in. And there's, again, there's a lot of different jobs in security, and not all of them are technical. Not all of them require coding at all. For instance, in you know, my day-to-day routine, you know, I do a lot of security assessments and stuff like that. It involves no code at all. So that part of my job requires absolutely no code at all. I don't really start touching code and stuff until it gets into the threat emulation and that piece of my job. Once I start creating labs and dealing with Terraform and get into that kind of stuff. But yeah, for my day-to-day, just doing assessments and such, no, I don't deal with any code at all. So it's absolutely not required. However, I will say that it's incredibly useful. And again, kind of understanding what your goals are in your career can kind of steer you as to what languages you may want to start with. So I started as a blue teamer. I started in IT. So I would say that I didn't even really start touching any programming languages till about 2017 or so. 2017. And it was PowerShell. Right, I started automating everything with PowerShell because I was an administrator, and I mean, you can do so much stuff with it. It was cool. You start creating enough custom things with PowerShell, you can't help but run into .NET. So I was doing a lot of PowerShell stuff, a lot of .NET stuff, and then we had a developer who was really good with he was really good with PHP and Python, and he and I did some interesting kind of like hybrid stuff with his web servers and my backend Windows servers and that kind of stuff, but. That was really how I first kind of got into languages. And it's very interesting because I don't feel like I sat down and studied programming or anything at any point in time, aside from actually what I'm literally doing now. But it was just I did a couple of tasks per day, and then you do a couple of more and a couple of more, and then you become the guy who knows PowerShell, and you just, you know, your scripts become better and more efficient and longer you realize like, oh, I actually know this language now. That being said, I have created all kinds of different solutions and weird stuff with APIs and stuff with PowerShell. I'm a strong believer in living off the land. So I spend a lot of time in the PowerShell world. So on my desk stand right now, actually, I have a C++ book as well as a .NET book because I'm brushing up on some of the payloads and some reversing stuff right now. So you never stop learning. You're always dabbling, but to answer your question, no, definitely not required to get into it. But if you're gonna be offensive, the more offensive you are and the more technical you are, you can't really avoid it. And I will say that about all skill sets, no matter what it is, if it involves technology, if the more offensive that you become, the more things that you're gonna need to know, because you don't know what's gonna be behind that next door. You don't know if that next system is gonna be a database. Well, what if you don't like databases, right? You don't know if that's going to be a Linux box, but what if you've only practiced, pwning Windows boxes, web services? You know, there's all kinds of possibilities that are there. So it's just about, you know, becoming that Swiss Army knife of technology and just adding more tools to your belt. You know, so I would say it's not necessarily a question of do you need it. It's a question of is it useful. If so, why wouldn't you have it, right? Throw it in the toolbox.
Yeah, very, very, very good to get your point of view, because it's really interesting. I had Alyssa Knight on here, and she doesn't know how to code, which someone that's a hacker at her level really surprised me that she didn't know how to code, and then kind of starting out when she did. So it's always interesting to hear that. But one of the things I always ask a question is, so, you know, the listeners that are, you know, listening to the episodes kind of realize, okay, this doesn't have to stop me from starting. I can get in to the role and I can learn coding if I need to or if I want to. So, you know, a lot of times I think people put up too many things blocking them from, you know, trying to get started.
Yeah, I see internships all the time that pop up. There, like I said, there's a lot of communities. Join these communities on Discord and Twitter, LinkedIn, and just be active. Don't be scared to speak up and, again, ask questions. You never know. Especially if you're new starting out, I would say, you know, my advice, if you don't know where to start at all, is look up CompTIA Security Plus, pick up a CompTIA Security Plus book, see if you still like it. If you like it, take the cert. It's a relatively cheap cert, multiple choice, and go for an internship. Once you have that cert in hand, go for an internship for 6 months, and see what you like. Get your hands on some things. See, you know.
So we're getting down towards the end of the show. Is there anything you'd like to share that we haven't discussed?
Not really. Well, so at the end of this year, I will be speaking at the Experts Conference in September. I will also be at Wild Wild West in October. And you can catch Active Directory Hacking Village at Blue Team Con this year, as well as the Experts Conference and at Hackers Teaching Hackers. So busy for the next few months, but I'm around. Feel free to come up to me, come up to my booth. If you ever see me at Active Directory Hacking Village, if you ever see the TriMark booth, come up to us, talk to us. Feel free to talk to me about anything. If you have any questions about anything, love to talk.
Well, thanks for being a guest, and for everyone listening to this episode. We will have his social media links in the show notes to Twitter and LinkedIn, so I'm sure he would be happy to answer your questions and connect with you. So, you know, as we kind of mentioned, the networking part, always be networking, so that it's an opportunity for you to connect. Thanks again for being a guest, and I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you on the next episode.
BugCrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Hacker Factory podcast with Philip Wiley. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itsbmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.